17. She said she knew exactly what she wanted. Evergreen, fertilized and grew up to a woman. Every time she flip her hair, botanical aromas fill the room. Aura of a goddess, she never broke a promise. Got a list of broken hearts. But you notice that she rides, she rides, she rides for me. You notice that she rides, she rides, she rides for me.
For me.
Oh, evergreen.
It's been so long, I almost don't even know what to do, you know? Like, yeah, it really has been a while.
We keep going on weird hiatuses.
Yeah.
We're not playing. I promise you, we like schedule stuff, and then one of us gets busy. Not yeah. Just me. Sometimes it's Lee.
Yeah, it really, like, I think the last time it was actually my fault.
No, last time was my fault.
But, yeah.
So the first time was your fault, second time was my fault.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, long hiatus, but we're back. It's good to be here. Good to see my guy, man. Haven't seen you in so long. How you doing?
All right, you know, I'm pretty sick, so you're gonna hear a lot of blowing noses and stuff. Holy shit, man. You know how washed I am?
I forgot to talk into the fucking mic, bro. I was just talking. Shit, let me check if my mic is connected. Let's see what my audio input is.
Yeah, because they definitely would kill it. It'd be very on brand for the first one back to just
struggle this way.
But
USB microphone. Okay.
Excellent. We're back, man. You already know who it is by the having to check the audio sources. You know who it is. Running back the hits. We're back. I'm in the building. Youngs is in the building. Happy that you're here tuning in with us. We got a good one today. I can't believe this hasn't come up yet, believe it or not.
Yeah. We got one that Lee brought to the table, and I don't know if I really followed the guidelines of what we were going to do, but we're going to have a good conversation because we're going to talk about two people that we would want to talk about on the show, but not sure we could do. We could probably do a whole episode on both of them. So we're going to give you a 3-hour extravaganza right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is definitely one I'm excited for. And you did follow the premise, so...
Yeah, I just don't know if it's my favorite or if I think it's the best. It's
I don't even know if I picked. I definitely didn't pick what I think is the best. I don't even know if I picked my favorite. Just a fun one, you know?
Yeah. So me and Lee are talking about 2-3 album runs. I believe for both of ours. Yeah, for both of ours, the three albums are the only three albums for these people.
Yes.
So kind of a trilogy of sorts.
Yes.
I guess we could talk a little later as we dig into it if we think they're going to end up releasing another one for both of ours.
Right.
One might be more likely than the other.
Yeah, I think one is announced, actually. Yours. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. That's good news. So which one do we want to start off with? How do we want to do this? Do we want to do first album for each one, go back and forth? Do we want to do all three at once?
That's actually a great question. We can just go back and forth, 1-1, 2-2, 3-3.
Okay. Yeah. Let's start with yours. So Lee, tell them what you picked.
So yeah, like Young said, we're talking 3 album runs. I mean, we have been gone a while, but everyone knows that I'm like the R&B guy here. So I had to go with the R&B singer, one of my favorites, someone who I think is super influential, someone who I grew up on. That's D'Angelo. So I'm going with D'Angelo, his 3 album run, of course, Brown Sugar, Voodoo, and Black Messiah. Starting with Brown Sugar, which comes out in 98, I believe. Kind of this album that gave legitimacy to the neo soul movement, I would say. Like, I don't know how many albums were that big in the genre at that point, so I think it kind of solidifies it. comes in 95, actually, not 98. But interesting thing about this album is I feel like it was kind of a slow burn. Like, it kind of came out and it was a little popular. Brown Sugar and Lady, the two singles, didn't really hit until later. But this album is crazy to me, man. Super influential when you look at any of the people who are operating in like alternative R&B today, especially kind of the more quote unquote artsy folks, you know, the neo soul, Soulquarian outfit, which D'Angelo was kind of like the king of, was super influential. So Brown Sugar, the first one, I really, really love. I don't know, like, I don't know what your experience with Brown Sugar is, but.
So Brown Sugar, the song, is a song that I've had like a relationship to for a while.
Yeah.
Enjoy the hell out of that song. Maybe my favorite song that's like an innuendo about drugs and alcohol and substances, like in that realm, Brown Sugar is probably my favorite one. I think before we dig into the album, we should talk a little bit about D'Angelo and like how he got to that point. D'Angelo is the son of a priest in Virginia. The reason I bring that up, I feel like that comes up a lot with certain artists, but there are certain artists that it kind of attaches either A, with D'Angelo's case, I think through his like spirituality in his music. Again, I'm going to mispronounce a bunch of words today. I'm a little congested. I'm trying my best. Yeah, there's like a spiritual nature to D'Angelo's music. And I think that relates a lot back to his time as like a choir boy and like his family said he started playing the piano at 3 years old in the church and that sort of thing. So he's always been musically gifted in like a church sense. So when he branches out and does the devil's music or sexual based stuff, it's still going to have that church like feel in the sound and the tone. And he gets his start doing co-writing a song for this like super group. Lee, are you aware of this? Have you heard this?
Yeah, it was that one song.
The super group made one song.
Yeah, I can't remember the song.
So the name of the song is You Will Know. And I'm pulling up the list of the people that were part of You Will Know, but the name of the group is Black Men United.
Yeah.
The song came out in 1994. They only released one song. D'Angelo wrote it. He, in the music video, the song is for a movie called Jason's Lyric. And in the music video, D'Angelo plays like a choir director. And the list of artists that helped contribute were Aaron Hall, After Seven, I'll Be Sure, Boys to Men, Brian McKnight, Christopher Williams, DRS, D'Angelo wrote the song, Damien Hall, L. DeBarge, Gerald Levert, H-Town, Intro, Joe, Keith Sweat, Lenny Kravitz played the guitar, Lil Joe, Portrait, The Bad Man R. Kelly, Savory, Stokely, Tevin Campbell, Tony Tone Tone, and Usher.
I do remember reading about this because I was, you know, really what kind of got him to start. He was also a guy who did a lot of like open mics and, you know, like the Apollo, like competitions like that. And he, that's really how he got to start.
He won the Apollo 3 weeks in a row. And after he won 3 weeks in a row, he got signed and then they helped him push out Brown Sugar.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that you bring up like the gospel too, because I think you can see it probably the most in Brown Sugar, the gospel influence in his music. It shows up all across his music on all the three albums, but definitely the most on Brown Sugar. You can definitely hear like the gospel influence. Something like All Right was like a perfect example.
Yeah. I think he, so, I mean, you talked about the neo soul. That's a type of R&B that I think me and you have spoken highly of.
Yeah,
on this show, between the cross of R&B and hip hop and how those two kind of intertwined when it came to neo soul and the type of sound they created. And Brown Sugar's really, it really does have that like dark and grimy funk music to it. I think of a song like Shit Damn Motherfucker on there.
Oh man, I love that song.
I love that song too. It's yeah, I mean it takes like the type of music that we heard Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye early on do with that funk sound, and he slows it down, kind of grinds it to a halt to make this song about infidelity, which again, when we talk about someone that's like part of the church, when they do cross over to this kind of music, we kind of hear something that's less fun, I would say, when it talks about something like infidelity. Like it's not a song bragging about infidelity. It's more of a caution tale in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Shit Damn Motherfucker is a funny one because it's not super wordy, but it's very visual. Like he doesn't say a lot, but with the little that he says, you can really visualize the whole story. Yeah, definitely one of my favorites on the album for sure.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about Brown Sugar. I like that one a lot. Lady's a really special one. That's a single off there.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the times, like, the single sticks out a little more, maybe because I'd heard it before, but when I replayed Brown Sugar in prep for this show, like, Lady was, it caught my ear again, even towards the back half of the album. I think it's the second to last song on there.
I love the way this thing ends. Like, the last three are some of my favorites. When We Get By is probably my favorite song on here. Probably the song with the most expansive songwriting. Like, there's not a ton of like lyrics on here. You know, there's a ton of music, and D'Angelo plays most of the music. He had like a big like Prince inspiration there. He saw how Prince played, arranged, sung, did everything, and he was like, "I want to do that too." So, a lot of what D'Angelo does on here that's so amazing is in the instrumentation. He's a really good singer too. Like, I love the way he sings, but. When We Get By is like that perfect mesh of, I love the way he's writing and the music. It all just comes together like amazingly.
Yeah. I mean, back to the Prince influence, we'll talk about it more when we start talking about the sabbaticals he took and the long breaks in between albums. But one of the major reasons is he had that Prince mindset, and it pissed off the label a lot because he wanted complete creative control and he didn't want Virgin Music to hear it until he was absolutely done.
Yep.
Which might not be too, it's hard to convince a label after one album, like, hey, give me the keys and get the fuck out the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might have stopped a lot of what was put out, but.
I think it definitely comes up, label disputes and stuff like that. I think he had a little bit more clout, I guess. I think they just knew how talented he was. He did pretty much all this like at his mom's house, wrote and arranged a lot of it at his mom's house, recorded it in New York City, I think. But yeah, he was definitely one of those, and you see it throughout all the three albums, like, I'm gonna play pretty much all the music, I'm gonna write pretty much everything. Not a lot of features, no features on this one. Handles pretty much everything in house. So
yeah. I don't know. What else you got on Brown Sugar? Talk to me about Brown Sugar a little more.
So, Brown Sugar, when we talk about, this is a little pre like Soulquarian. Soulquarian, obviously, the big collective of D'Angelo, Questlove, Jill Scott, Erykah Badu, Common, Maxwell, etc., etc. Brown Sugar comes a little bit before the Soulquarians get together, but it's still kind of looped in with the Soulquarian albums. I think this is the best Soulquarian album. Voodoo is amazing. We'll get to Voodoo. Voodoo kind of gets that credit in his discography. Maxwell has a couple. Badu, of course. Even some people kind of consider Miseducation a Soulquarian album a little bit. I really don't. But I think Brown Sugar is the quintessential Soulquarian album. So if you're going back into that era, Brown Sugar is, to me, the one you should start with, like, just kickstarted everything. And I think a lot of these other people were looking at Brown Sugar for inspiration. and Brown Sugar was the one that kind of kicked it off. So yeah, Brown Sugar is the one. big fan of this one.
Yeah. I don't know. I really like Voodoo. I think this is neck and neck with Voodoo. This might be better. I guess it depends on my day, but I think Brown Sugar is definitely his funkiest. I think it's his most upbeat, and I think it's the one you can return to the most, especially singular songs.
Yeah.
My favorite D'Angelo songs might be on here. Yeah, it's such a hell of a debut. Like, yeah, I don't think that's really what gets enough credit, is because he is relatively an unknown at this point.
Yep.
We talk about a guy that was performing at the Apollo in like 1992, and by 95, he, like, we're talking 3 years later, his only real exposure is writing a song for like every talented black R&B singer.
Right.
Of the 90s. So does it really matter who writes that song? That probably ends up doing pretty well.
Right. Came out of nowhere. He was like 2021, like recording this stuff, which is just insane. But yeah. Crazy record. Changed R&B, like, for real. Super, super important for the genre, especially where it is now. So yeah, classic. Amazing project.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about an album that came out in 95, and he's only 48 years old right now.
Yep.
Insanely impressive. Honestly, I don't know. Do you want to go on to Voodoo, or should we go on to mine?
Yeah, let's go to yours. Let's go to your debut.
All right, we're going to go to mine. My debut is also impressive by a group of young gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
I picked the Ray Shremmerd. Ray Shremmerd run, and their first album, Shrem Life. So Ray Shremmerd, this group from Mississippi, they're a Southern hip hop. Yeah, so Ray Shremmerd's a group, backwards, their name spells Ear Drummers, which is the label owned by Mike Will Made It, the super producer.
Yep.
And they're just these, I think, are they twins? No, they're not twins. They're brothers, though.
Yeah.
From Mississippi. And they hit the scene early on with a song called No Flex Zone. Lee, do you remember the first time you heard No Flex Zone? Or?
I do remember No Flex Zone. I was like, young. That's the main thing I remember about hearing No Flex Zone. I feel like I was super young, and I was like, these guys aren't that much older than me, probably. that was such a thing with the early marketing of Ray Shremmerd. Everyone thought they were like kids, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, No Flex Zone comes out when they're about 15, I want to say. It comes out in early 2014. They are super young.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I heard that. It might have taken a little bit to get to me. I'm not sure. No, I mean, it was kind of a relatively big hit right away, especially
that song. Yeah.
And it sounded like two little kids making music.
Literally. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the other songs that were coming out around that time. What was that? I mean, there was the, like, Whippin' Nae Nae song.
Yeah, there I was. Feel like Kid Ink was probably out here at that time.
No, not Kid Ink. I'm trying to think of, like, the one-hit wonder dance songs. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
There was, like, the Juju on the beat. And like that. And that's really what it felt like with No Flex Zone at the time. It felt like kids that are making a song, a bunch of people are going to rock with it, and then they're kind of disappear.
Yeah,
and they did exactly the fucking opposite.
Yeah,
they hit the scene again with No Type, and No Type was kind of their solidifying. They sound a little older.
Yeah,
balls dropped, puberty hit, voice got a little deeper.
Yeah,
it's funny when you listen to the Ray Shremmerd album how No Flex Zone sounds completely different than every other song on there.
Yeah,
they become a little more like not just mature, but their sound becomes a little more polished compared to what No Flex Zone was.
Yeah, and I think more varied too. Like something that we'll definitely get into to me when we get to like Shrimp Life 2 and 3 a little bit. But hearing like a No Flex Zone, which sounded like it fit in amongst where like rap music was. And then we get the album and you get a song like, I think Unlock the Swag is a perfect example. That song is like super weird in a good way. Like it sounds, it doesn't sound like some mainstream shit, but like it's really, really cool, creative, left field. Even a song like Y&O, which I'm not like a huge fan of, but shit like that, it just sounds like kind of different and really, really cool. You get like some variety in the sound.
Yeah. So looking back now, the songs I like on the Ray Shremmer like debut album, Shrem Life.
Yeah.
Songs I like on Shrem Life are really, really good. And the songs I don't like, the songs that haven't aged well, they have aged fucking terribly. Like really big fan of This Could Be Us. I think this is This Could Be Us is really indicative of what they end up doing on Shrem Life 2. And I think the success of that song and the way people, the way it really stuck with people end up inspiring what they want to do. Yep. And they kind of find their lane that way. Throw Some Mo will never, ever get old for me.
Right.
Thug verse between Nicki Minaj, all of it, even their verses individually. Like that song is near, it is perfect. It's a perfect song. Come Get Her, another one, really good. I am still a big fan of No Type, and I know the way we talk about No Flex Zone, still a fan of that. But I mean, some of them like Y&O, Safe Sex, Paychecks, Up Like Trump. Oof, talk about
Up Like Trump. That was funny. They had to come out and like pretty much denounce the record eventually. That's very funny.
Lit Like Bic is complicated because there are parts of that song where I'm really into it and then I get bored. Yeah. Like I think the beginning of it, I'm really into that, and then I kind of get bored halfway through. Unlock the Swag, not too big of a fan of. Like there, the other impressive thing, I mean, I talked about Young Thug and Nicki Minaj on here, and there's a Big Sean feature. A lot of it is just them two.
Yep.
Always a good sign that they can carry songs by themselves.
Yeah, it's super interesting how, I don't even want to say polished, because like I said, some of this stuff is kind of a little off kilter, but just how quick they hit the ground running. I mean, obviously probably some of that is due to Mike Will, but I mean, something that we've seen throughout is that, you know, when they branch off and kind of do stuff on their own, they're creative guys. Like they can make some cool shit. So it seems like they kind of had that from jump. But yeah, I like this project a lot too.
Yeah, it might be my least favorite from them in totality, honestly. I don't know if that's...
I think because I agree with you, the project is slightly inconsistent. You definitely get those glimpses. Like you talked about This Could Be Us and Come Get Her. Like you get glimpses of what is to come. And even with like some of the weirdness. Like I said, like I love Unlock the Swag. Unlock the Swag is probably my favorite song on here. Just so weird, and yeah, it's like just so different from what I would expect them to be, you know, coming off like No Flex Zone. So
that is a fair point. Yeah. And I mean, like we mentioned, like it feels like they recorded a lot of Shrem Life like a year or two after they recorded No Flex Zone. So you see a lot of growth there, especially in sound and age and a little more bass in their voice, that kind of thing. Like, I don't... So, Sway Lee kind of got a little bit of a higher voice in general. I don't know if I can listen to No Flex Zone and tell you which one Slim Jim could be on. He sounds completely... Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me a top three off Shrem Life.
Top three off of Shrem Life.
Could be in order. Doesn't have to be in order. Whatever.
Okay, let me go no order. I'm going to go with This Could Be Us. I'm going to go with No Type. And I'm going to go with Unlock the Swag.
Really?
That's my top three.
That just pissed me off.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if you remember this, but when the project came out, Kendrick tweeted Unlock the Swag. He like tweeted some of the lyrics of the song. And that was funny. That's actually like what made me go back and listen to it again, just seeing Kendrick be like, yo, I like this song. So yeah, that is my top three.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Throw Some Mo number one. Clearly. And then This Could Be Us and No Type.
Yep.
I mean, we got a similar top three. It was
two out of three.
Throw Some Mo. That might be my favorite song of theirs, like in totality, like anything they've ever put out.
I definitely have some like Throw Some Mo memories, which is crazy because I feel like I didn't leave and like go to school until a couple years after that it came out. So yeah, definitely like it was something that people were feeling for a while. And yeah, super dope song. Thug on there. I love
it's
Thug.
It's 7 years old, man, and places still set off when they hear it.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Should we go on to Voodoo?
Going back yes. To Voodoo? On to Voodoo. So coming back to D'Angelo, Brown Sugar hits 95. 5 year kind of mini hiatus before we get Voodoo in 2000. In between there, D'Angelo, you know, kind of has the success of Brown Sugar. He goes through some writer's block. He has a child, which kind of inspires this record, apparently. And also what inspires this record is D'Angelo really just like dissatisfied with his peers in R&B. Like he is just like really upset with what R&B artists are doing. He's like, they're making this club shit. They're not like in tune with the essence of the genre. And he's like, along with having a kid, he's like, this is what is going to inspire this next record. And we get Voodoo. Which is the thing that's continuous throughout Voodoo. Voodoo is like a really hit or miss album for people because the one way to describe this album is it's super fucking off kilter. I was watching Questlove, you know, Questlove and D'Angelo, super long time collaborators. Questlove was playing some drums when they were recording this. And D'Angelo was like, no, I want you to play it drunker. You know, I want you to play the drums drunker. And you can, and I remember like hearing that and just so much of the Voodoo click for me because it is so off kilter. It is so like human, like not programmed in the way that the music sounds. It sounds just different compared to like everything else. This is, like I said, this is a hit or miss album. Not everybody likes it, but the people who love it, love it. I am one of the people who loves it.
I love it as well.
Yeah, like I think he improves on the songwriting front. He gets a little better writing songs. Untitled is kind of the biggest song on here, but like he gets a little varied. Like he does a Spanish joint. He has Red and Meth on for Left and Right. You get like that big hip-hop influence. Devil's Pie is another one I love. Like this album is super dope, and I love how just different it is. Like coming off of Brown Sugar, he's able to again do some shit that like nobody has done. He's able to do that two times in a row to me, which is super dope.
Yeah. So Voodoo is like it's a mark of the turn of the century. It comes out in 2000.
Yep.
D'Angelo kind of has a big hiatus. Kind of gets a little label pressure to put something out, and he comes to the table with something that's true to what he makes, something that stays within that soul sound, something that stays within the funk that he makes, and
yep.
Kind of brings, like Lee said, something completely different while staying true to himself. And it's an accomplishment like no other. I mean, he wins awards left and right, wins the best R&B Grammy.
Yeah.
I think Untitled wins best R&B song. The other thing that this does is it kind of solidifies him as like a sex symbol, which is affecting his career.
Yeah. Quite a bit. The untitled video, if you haven't seen it, you watch it and then you'll know why.
So he gets D'Angelo's kind of why am I blanking on the word? Holy shit. I got COVID fog right now. What's the name of a person? Introvert. He's an introvert. Holy
right.
shit.
Yeah, right, right.
I'm struggling on the word introvert right now. This is good. This is good.
Right.
Yeah. So he's an introvert. Like, he's not really big in the showy nature. And for the untitled video, he gets in the gym with a trainer for about 3 or 4 months and he suddenly becomes absolutely ripped.
Yeah.
And he's naked in this video. I mean, he's an attractive dude and now he's jacked. And he kind of gets the impression that people are there to watch his body, not listen to his art.
Yeah. The tour for this album just was completely ruined. Chicks were like throwing bras at him on stage.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, it fucked with his mental. Like, I think, you know, you would read about he would be backstage doing like sit ups before the shows because he was like insecure about his just ripped abs. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's a lot for a person to take in all at once.
Yep.
Again, like I said, he was a normal dude, like normal body type, normal dude. He gets ripped in like 3 or 4 months, and then it's just like a shower of I'm pouring love and. Yep. Especially when you've kind of hidden in the shadows for a lot of your life and you take this 4-year break from stardom. I mean, he was on tour and stuff and like he was collaborating with others, but he wasn't the center of attention. And and like we said, Brown Sugar wasn't like a massive, massive hit.
Correct.
So then Voodoo comes and comes off and running and he's got this other baggage that he's got to deal with now. Kind of affects him a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it kind of, I mean, obviously, I don't know if he said this, but I can see part of why that might hurt because Voodoo is more than that. You know, obviously, I said like it was partly inspired by the birth of his child. So it like it gets deeper again into thoughts of like spirituality, like maturation. And like I said at the beginning, he was inspired by like the previous. You know, I think he called them the masters of the genre, people who he wanted to like uphold their vision of R&B. So yeah, when it just goes from that into, you know, we want to see you with your shirt off, like, yeah, that can, you know, definitely fuck with you. So
yeah. And I mean, that's the album cover and all that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
As for the music, I feel like I've talked everything except the music.
Yeah.
This is really hip hop inspired.
Yep.
There's a lot of like Premier gives him the Devil's Pie beat. Like, there's a lot of rap music influence in it. That's why I really like it personally.
Yeah.
And he still keeps that spiritual, church-like gospel voice. And he doesn't really go into that club music that you were talking about that other R&B singers were doing at that time.
Yeah.
And I think you need to excel so much at one particular thing to go against the grain.
Yeah.
And yeah, Voodoo, there are very few people on this earth that are able to put a project out like Voodoo.
Yeah.
Or to have that level of impact.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, he only has 3 albums. It might be I think it's probably my favorite album of his.
Yeah.
It's one you have to listen to in totality, though, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, this is like, I was talking a little bit about Brown Sugar because it's not really a soulcore album. This is really, you know, one of the first soulcorean albums, D'Angelo and Quest and everybody just holing up at Electric Lady Studios, you know, for a couple of years. This is one of the first albums that, well, not one of the first, D'Angelo's first album to come from that collective. And yeah, it's a special one. It weirdly enough, you know, I've held it, you know, I've said all these good words about it. I don't like it as much as I feel like most people do. But it is just a monster. It's amazing. So
I will say the one complaint I do have of it, it's so fucking long.
It is long. It's like,
it's 13 songs and it's an hour 15.
D'Angelo loves long songs. I think the shortest song on here is like 4 minutes. Yeah. Like, all it has a good amount of songs, and yeah, all the songs are long. I think, and that a lot of that kind of comes from his background as like instrumentalist, so just, you know, kind of grooving and shit like that. I think that kind of comes into it, but yeah, amazing album. If I had to give like a top three, this is gonna be super tough. I would say Untitled is gonna be in there. Spanish Joint is gonna be in there. I love Spanish Joint, and Feel Like Making Love. That's my third. Love that song.
Yeah, mine's a little more basic. Devil's Pie, Left and Right. God, Redman and Method Man really work well in that setting. That, okay, so not to go on a tangent, there's a very underrated thing about Wu-Tang and their ability to hop on R&B songs and kind of just flow through while still keep it, like, they don't tone down their aggressiveness, really.
Right. But yeah, they're just good at getting on stuff that just matches up with what they have going on.
Yeah, and they did it a lot in the 90s. They do it with, like, SWV. They do it with modern day, like, Teyana Taylor.
Or, yep.
Help me out. I don't know. What else they got, Lee?
Ghostface was just with Summer on the Kendrick.
Yeah.
Ghostface, he was on the last Genevieve project too, which is kind of crazy. But
yeah, I mean, they hop on R&B stuff all the time.
So. Yep. Yeah.
But yeah, like I was saying, Devil's Pie, Left and Right, and probably Feel Like Making Love. Yeah. I like that song a lot too.
Dope.
Did we do a top three for Brown Sugar? Let's retroactively do a top three for Brown Sugar.
Oh man. That's damn. Top three for Brown Sugar. When We Get By is gonna be in my top three. Oh my god. Me and Those Dreaming Eyes of Mine is one that actually might slide in my top three.
Really?
Yeah, I really, really like that one. Oh man, because it's tough. That means one of Brown Sugar or Lady is not gonna get in. I'll go Lady for my third. Crazy to leave Brown Sugar out, but.
So I'm going to go Brown Sugar, Shit Damn Motherfucker, and then it's between When We Get By and Lady for me, and I might have to go Lady. I think Lady came out on the car the other day while I was driving, and I was like, damn, this shit is this shit is unreal.
Yeah.
Oh. All right.
Yeah. On to Ray Shrimmer. Back to Ray Shrimmer. Oh, cool.
Yeah, Shrem Life 2.
Mm-hmm.
Shrem, the anticipation of Shrem Life 2 was huge for Young Youngest.
Shit, everybody.
I could not wait for it. I remember I was working at Goodwill, taking donations, you know, hauling heavy shit in the summer.
Yep.
And I was waiting for it to drop. And I was talking to a coworker. I was like, yeah, I can't wait for that Shrem Life 2. And he said, you listen to that garbage? I said, fuck yeah, I do. He got mad. He was trying to put me on some real hip-hop shit. And in the back of my head, I was like, bro, trust me. I listen to as much as you do, but, like, lighten up, have some fun. Shrem Life 2 about to drop.
Yeah, this is serious, man. Shrem Life 2 is legit a moment, I feel. Like,
look Alive. Like, ran my summer up until that point.
Yeah.
Yoga was another major single on there.
Yeah.
Real big one.
I feel like the singles just set the stage for this like crazy. Cause I feel like there were still people who were, I don't know if Ray Shrimmer is like in it for the long haul. They had like one project, like they had a couple songs, but they're not serious. They're not going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there was definitely a contingency.
So it was like a full year, and it felt like they never really left the cycle. I feel like they had music coming up to the album drop. The album drops. After the album drops, This Could Be Us starts getting some play. Throw Some More starts getting some play. By the time, like, what else? come get her starts getting some play. And by the time those singles start dying off, Look Alive comes out. By Chance comes out. Do Yoga comes out. Yep. And they kind of just continuously push until the album. And then boom, Black Beatles.
Black Beatles.
It's fucking over. It's fucking over. I remember on my first listen to the album, I heard Black Beatles and I was like, I'm on my Lying Bron moment, but I promise you. I heard that shit and I was like, yeah, that's the fucking one. And I played that shit into the ground, and then they get blessed with the mannequin challenge and it becomes the number one song in the fucking world. It's the biggest thing on the planet.
Black Beatles was so big, dude. Like, presidential candidate doing it on their private jet with their staff. Big, like, Black Beatles was fucking massive.
Black Beatles is massive. Swang had a little bit of a moment between, like, some circles. I don't think it was that big of a song, but I remember the people that liked Swang really fucking liked Swang, and they played that shit into the ground.
Yep.
There's other stuff on here. A little bit more, like, I want to say it's more genre bending.
Absolutely.
Felt like we're leading into, like, some EDM, more house music stuff when it came to, like, Real Chill or Start a Party or Shake It Fast. Like,
yeah,
those felt like it was out of their comfort zone a little bit, and it still worked really well.
Yeah, I don't look at this. Is I don't think there's really a miss to be found here, honestly.
Yes, I mean, I love this goddamn album a lot.
This shit is crazy. Like,
Take It or Leave It felt like an evolution of what we were just talking about.
Yep. And Take It or Leave It is like a big swing. It's a song that I enjoy, but I could understand somebody not liking it, because it is actually like a really risky song. Like, and stuff that, like I was saying on one with, like, Unlock the Swag, like, big kind of like younger rap group, you wouldn't really think they would be doing stuff like this. But yeah, I like Take It or Leave It too. Like, it's a fucking big swing, and I think they just knock it out the park.
Yeah. We kind of, Just Like Us, kind of feels in that realm as well. I don't know if you remember that song all that well, but that feels something like from the Take It or Leave It or Come Get Her or This Could Be Us, like, realm of the music that they make. Like, the less party music, and then they're kind of slowing things down a little bit.
Yeah.
Big fan of that. You talked about how you loved how weird Unlock the Swag was. That's how I feel about Swang. Like, Swang was just so different and so out there, and it was, felt like a song. I think my brother wasn't really into it. My brother's a few years older than me. Felt like a song that, me being 18, like, going into college, I'm like, this is the fucking future.
Yeah.
This is right. Hot as shit.
Yeah.
Like, listen to this. And he's hearing it and he's like, I like Ray Shremmer, but I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Like, this isn't the song that you should be showing me off this album.
Right. Right. But like you said, it Swang, I don't want to just say it was primarily age, but the group who likes Swang, that, like, they played the shit out of Swang. Like, we, and I say it because we both like the song. Like, there's something that we see in Swang that is just super awesome. And it's an amazing record. Like, it's one of the first moments, I think, where I'm like, okay, maybe Swae Lee could do, like, some stuff on his own, because I think he really shines on that. But, I mean, they both have their great moments on here. Like I said, not really a miss to be found. Like, this shit is crazy.
Love this album. Fuck it, do we want to do a top three?
It's a tough, this is a tough three, but man. Yeah, actually, I don't know if I want to do one now.
I'll help you out a little bit. I'm going to throw Black Beatles on there because I have to.
Okay.
Shit. I'm going to throw Swang on there. And then I think it's between Look Alive and Do Yoga.
Yeah.
And I love Slim Jimmy's verse and Do Yoga, so I'm probably going to go there. Slim Jimmy's verse and Do Yoga is probably my favorite verse on this whole album.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Look Alive. Okay. I'm going to go with Swang. And I'm going to go with I'm actually going to go with Set the Roof. Set the Roof kind of, I like a lot of the more like melodic stuff they're doing on here. Set the Roof is just them kind of getting back into like those young kids who made No Flex on, but they're just a little older now. Big fan of that one. But yeah, like Black Beatles, of course, Do Yoga, like a lot of shit right there. Very good album. This shit, like, and it might just be like I was going right into college. This shit is classic right here, man. Like, this shit is crazy.
Oh, no, it's really fucking good. I hope homie I worked with at Goodwill found the vision on Swang
of it. Yeah, man.
I hope he figured it out. So we're gonna go back to Black Messiah.
Yeah, back to D'Angelo at the third albums at this point. Voodoo comes out 2000, Black Messiah comes out 2014. So another long gap between releases here.
Should we do context before or after we talk about the music? What do you think?
We can do just a little before, just whatever flows. I mean, okay, you know, and we talked a little bit about with Voodoo, you know, D'Angelo kind of just having like, I don't want to say like a mental breakdown, but just like wanting to get away from his music career. And he does that. He goes away for a long, long time, doesn't make music. In between, there were some leaks and stuff that came out. And this album actually came a little early. I don't think this album was supposed to come out until like 2015 or 16. It comes out in 2014 because of the times that the country was in. D'Angelo felt that we got to get this record out now, so they rush and get it out. And this is an interesting one, man. Like, part of what happens in that 14-year gap when D'Angelo doesn't do music, he becomes a really fucking good guitarist. And you can kind of see that throughout the album, just him, especially compared to like Voodoo and Brown Sugar, just like his growth as a guitarist. You get a lot more, political theme stuff, little like heavier stuff here. You get that here that wasn't really on the other albums. This is interesting.
We should mention that he does this album with a full band.
Yep.
The Vanguard.
Yep.
He went recruited other instrumentalists and he works on producing with them instead of, I mean, there is like full creative control, but it's not just him this time. I mean, to add a little more context, like, he comes out with Voodoo. We talked a little bit about his uncomfortable reaction to being a sex symbol. He takes a little time, the labels asking for a follow-up to Voodoo because Voodoo is like a massive success. And his reaction to that is kind of like, they want Voodoo 2, I don't want to do Voodoo 2, I want to do something completely different, and not just Voodoo 2 in name, but Voodoo 2 in style. He doesn't want to do a similar album, he wants to do something different. And I think Black Messiah at times might sound like old D'Angelo, but there are very distinct songs on here where you can tell he's making a conscious effort to sound different, especially with the first two songs. Part of that might be with the guitarist work, like you were talking about, in the instrumentation, but there are legit songs on here I cannot hear what he's saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he's singing and it's kind of like inaudible.
Yeah. And like, you want to talk about, you know, spiritual, like we talked with the first two, there is like that. There's a big aura of spirituality in this thing, obviously talking about like Black issues and stuff like that, being so influenced by older funk and stuff like that, I feel like that can come out pretty naturally. You know, there's this kind of like supernatural elements and stuff I'm hearing. But yeah, I think it's his most distinctive, in my opinion. You know, between Brown Sugar and Voodoo, even though Voodoo was so different from Brown Sugar, you can kind of see some connections there. I think this one is the most distinct, in my opinion.
Yeah. So after he has these issues with the label, D'Angelo kind of falls into substance abuse. He has some legal issues. I read a pretty descriptive article of his tour manager trying to get him into rehab that came out in about 2008. So this is still before the perspective of this album. It wasn't written as like a triumph that ended up happening with Black Messiah.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he got that triumph, and I'm glad people were able to write and discuss, and he was a little more open talking about his issues at that point. But this was written like at his rock bottom. It was pretty ugly, and there wasn't a whole lot of hope that he would ever release music again or he would ever reach the status that he was. And there's a line that he highlights in his Rolling Stone interview after this. They asked him a question, and the line he picked out from this album that he wanted to talk about was, "When you ask me what type of shape I'm in, I hope you don't mean my abdomen." Like, he was clearly still distraught. I don't want to contradict him, because in that same interview, he talks about people blowing out of proportion his body image issues and like him being a sex symbol, but he was clearly still thinking about how people related him to being D'Angelo as this ripped, in shape, sexy, instrumentalist and singer, when really he wanted to be D'Angelo the artist. And he was more worried about his mental well-being. So yeah, Black Messiah, like we said, kind of gets not rushed out, but it gets moved up for the issues that were happening in Ferguson and Eric Gardner, and he felt like it was an appropriate time to release that. I think he also mentioned he was inspired by a lot of music and musicians and stuff, but there seemed to be quite a connection that I think other people were making and he was okay agreeing with, but between that and To Pimp a Butterfly and kind of this Black excellence in music, when the Rolling Stone interview asks him how he feels about hip hop today, he said, "No comment, but I like Kendrick Lamar."
Which
made me laugh.
Yeah. And you know, there is that thing, like when I talked about with Voodoo, like he takes it so seriously, like the idea of looking to his predecessors and carrying the masterful performance of music forward, people who have that talent, like he takes that so seriously, which I mean is another reason why, if he didn't, he might have just put some shit out a couple years after Voodoo. Like, yeah, I'm fucked up, but we can just put some shit out, whatever. I think that's a big part of the reason for the hiatus as well. And yeah, I mean, To Pimp a Butterfly, those two albums were put together a lot. Obviously, Sly and the Family Stone is something that Questlove mentioned a lot as something that was kind of inspiration for the record. He even mentioned it in the Voodoo and Brown Sugar days, just how influenced he was of that group. So yeah, Sly and the Family Stone. He even talks about Beatles.
I was gonna say, do you know what's gonna like rile up some people? He definitely mentioned the Beatles as a huge inspiration, especially when he was playing like a lot of Sgt. Pepper stuff. Is baked into this.
Yeah, Beach Boys, like their Kravitz, Hendrix, like just, you know, great guitarist. He had that influence on here. And yeah, this is an interesting record, man. Like it is. I don't want to say it's my least favorite of the three. It is something that I just look at so separately. I love the growth on here, like the willingness to get into like political and social commentary, which is just not something that he was really doing a ton of before. I love the way he's like progressed in his songwriting, especially talking about like love. I think it was something that even from Voodoo, which he had progressed on from Brown Sugar, just continuing to progress, obviously progressing as a guitarist. Like, I just love the progression on here, and to make a project that is so of that moment and still relevant, obviously. But big fan of this record. I look at it kind of in isolation, though.
Yeah, to build on the love in the songwriting, Break My Heart is, or Betray My Heart, sorry. My Heart is probably my favorite song on here.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
Some really good stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think I listened to this when it came out because of the conversation around it. I can't say that I was too familiar with D'Angelo back in 2014. I mean, he was basically absent my entire life.
Exactly, yeah. I didn't catch it when it came out. I think I caught it, shit, maybe like 2018, 19, 20, like way later.
Well, what I was going to say was I'd heard about it. I might have listened to a few songs and said, you know what, this might not be music for me. Like, this is just like completely out of my zone of what I'm interested in.
Right. Yeah.
So coming back to it now, I think there was a moment attached to it that really helped elevate it, and I kind of might have missed that moment. Not saying this is bad, because I really did enjoy listening to it, but there was stuff on here that I just could not comprehend.
Yeah.
Like, why it was the way it was, especially early on. I was really worried listening to this as I was listening to the first few songs. Like,
yeah,
what's going, like, this is not Voodoo, this is not Brown Sugar, this is not the D'Angelo that I'm used to hearing. This sounds a completely new artist, and that kind of happens with a 15-year hiatus.
Exactly. Yeah, big fan of this one. Like I said, I kind of look at it in isolation, but another important one, like I said, from Brown Sugar to Voodoo, he found a way to just completely reinvent the wheel and still make crazy shit. He does it again, like, here. He does it again, maybe, like, not quite to the same degree as he did with Voodoo, but does it again, you know, never makes the same album twice. And important, like, in the moment, this might have been his most, like, important body of work. Like, the way I saw people talk about this, especially, like, around year-end time, was awesome. So, yeah. If I gotta do a little top three action, Betray My Heart would be in my top three. Really Love would probably be in my top three. And damn, let's go with Sugar Daddy. I'll go with Sugar.
God damn it, that's my same three.
But I do love the Door. The Door is like right there. And I like the intro a lot too.
Yeah. I like the two Back to the Futures.
Yep.
I like how they kind of coincide with each other. If you listen to them back to back, they kind of work really well with each other. But yeah, Betray My Heart, Really Love, Sugar Daddy. Sugar Daddy actually comes out in like 2012 because he was like not touring, but he was doing shows again. And he was singing that out there. So he was a little comfortable putting music back out.
Yep.
The thing that I found funny in the Rolling, I mean, so I read a lot about D'Angelo coming into this because I'm not super familiar with him and his career. So I wanted to be a little like familiar before I just dive in with Lee talking about it.
Right.
The thing that I felt was he's always interested in music. It doesn't feel like he's ever been uninterested in making music.
Yeah.
It just feels like there are parts of his life that kind of provide obstacles.
Yeah.
And it's weird that he's only put out three albums in 20 years.
Yeah.
And now we're reaching 2022, and it seemed like there was some hope in him when he did that Rolling Stone interview for Black Messiah, because he said, this is just the beginning. You're about to get a second half career of D'Angelo. And we're 8 years later and we haven't heard anything. So I hope he's doing all right. I know he just did a Versus.
Yeah.
Where he didn't go up against anyone. He brought like the friends. It was like D'Angelo and friends, and he brought people out to do music with him.
Yeah.
So hopefully he's working on something. Maybe he's just got a little writer's block, but
Yeah. And I think D'Angelo is one of those, something you see in a lot of artists, especially great artists. I think even funny, you talked about Kendrick. I think Kendrick has mentioned this and so many other artists. They're not, they got to go live, you know, I have to go live to make my art. So hopefully he's just doing a little more living. But yeah, I definitely would love some more D'Angelo music at some point. I don't think it would happen. I would love him getting with people from this generation. There's not a chance that would happen, but I would love him getting with like her or something like that. People who are making R&B now.
He's cool with her, right? Because I think her came out to the verses.
I think so. I don't know. I don't know. I don't see him like.
I saw the list of people who came out to the verses.
Hold on. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I just don't see him. I mean, partly just because of what we've seen from his music so far. I don't see him just collaborating with people from this generation. But Jesus Christ, I would love like him and like Lucky Day or some shit. Like that would be just crazy.
I think he would like to work more with an instrumentalist.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
A Dev Hines maybe.
Yeah. Jesus. That'd be insane.
I think him and Steve Lacy make very different music, but something yeah. within that realm. Like yeah. I don't know. You know a little more about this than me, but like R&B singers that really like play with their instruments and
yeah.
are really in tune with production instead of going out and singing.
Yeah, I think Dev Hines is one that just like yeah. immediately hit my mind. Like that'd be insane.
Yeah, I mean that he's just as weird, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
There's, I hate to reduce them to this, but there was a singer that you were really into, and I think you put at your year-end list. He's an openly gay R&B singer that really was putting out.
Shit. I don't know. Jameson?
Like he was like on your top, your like year end list. I'm forgetting what his name is.
I can't remember. I think the openly gay part is what's throwing me. I'm trying to think of all the men who were on my year end.
Is it Serpent with Feet?
Oh, Serpent with Feet. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Serpent with Feet. He seems like someone that D'Angelo would work with too, based off the music I've heard from him.
Yeah, and I mean, there are so many people, like I said earlier, that Soul Query and Neo Soul, that influence is heavy in like the alternative R&B space right now. It is super, mm-hmm. super heavy. So there are a plethora of guys like Kyle Dion is a guy who's like one of my favorites. I would love to see like them just riff. He's not really like a producer instrumentalist, but I would just love to see them riff. Like D'Angelo is someone who, the cool singers right now, all the cool singers love D'Angelo and Maxwell and Badu and like all the stuff that came from that era. It is so, so influential. So I would love him kind of getting with some of these people, maybe even to just like produce on their shit. Cause I think he would do that too. Like, here, let me like, just come jam with me and like, we'll make some shit. So.
Yeah. Let's move on to our final album.
Yes, sir.
We're gonna be doing it big, you know. This is a triple album. It's Ray Shremmer, Shrem Life 3. One album Ray Shremmer, one album Sway Lee, one album Slim Jimmy. This is not the final evolution because I don't think they're done, but
yeah,
this is them at the peak of their powers.
Yeah, allegedly they have an album coming this year, allegedly, but we'll see, because I think they dropped a single and I actually like the single, but I don't think I had a ton of buzz with it.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't let me down yet, so if they want to put out an album, I will be there to listen.
Exactly.
Big fan of them and their work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Shrem Life 3, I'm going to call it Shrem Life 3 because it's what?
Yeah.
Shrem with a 3?
Yeah. Shrem Life 3 is, yeah, for sure. That's what I'm calling it too.
They come with a lot more features, a lot bigger budget, a lot more ambition. And I think they hit on a lot of it, and a lot of it is forgettable, which is going to happen when you drop like a 30-song album.
Yeah.
What are your initial thoughts on
So, I remember Mike Will. I don't know if he tweeted or he said it somewhere. Shrem Life 3, we're doing a triple album. one for each guy in a collab. And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. Because, like, the rumors of Ray Shremmer breaking up were super heavy around that time. So I was like, okay, maybe they're actually breaking up. Or, I mean, this
every,
is like...
Every idiot with a social media account was screaming that Sway Lee was better than Slim Jimmy. Let me tell you what Shrem Life 3 fucking proves. The exact goddamn opposite.
And yeah,
get that out of the way before we start. I don't care if Lee agrees or disagrees. Slim Jimmy was running up the fucking score on his...
So Michael announces, like, we have these three separate ones, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm going to listen to it, but I don't know. I mean, part of me was hopeful because what Sway Lee was doing on features, and even what, like, Slim Jimmy was doing on features, I remember him on a – he did a joint with K-Camp called Free Money, which I fucking love. It's one of my favorite Slim Jimmy features. And, yeah, they
also hopped on Gucci's album for Stun Ain't Nothing.
Amazing.
The show, yeah.
So, yeah, what they were doing with their features, I was like, okay, they're kind of going in a different direction. So let's see what happens. Of course, it's long. It's super long. And I think that kind of diminishes the impact because it's hard for songs to, like, pop because there's so many, like, it's too many options to for one to kind of pop up. So I don't know. Do you want to start with any album in particular of the three?
Yeah, like, let's go in order. So let's start off with the dual album, and I think the best way to look at this, especially the way when I listen to it, I try to break it up between the 9-track albums. It's 27 songs, 3 9-track albums. I think the two major singles are on here, Perplexing Pegasus, which I remember when that one first came out, that single pops out, I was like kind of lukewarm on it. And it just grew and it grew and it kept growing on me. And now it's one of my favorite songs of theirs.
I think I was the really same way. Interesting.
Yeah. Power Glide is a 20-year-old's worst nightmare as a hip hop head because fucking that shit is just side to side, bro.
Yeah.
Juicy J's on this shit.
Yeah. Juicy J even comes to like reprise his role, you know?
Yeah, bro. That shit's just side to side.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a massive hit.
Yeah.
And like, there's Buckets on there. Huge fan of that one with Future. Again, like, they went all out on this one. They get Future, they get Juicy J, The Weeknd's on here early on. Travis Scott's on here early on. I'm a big fan of Close. I like how this starts out with Up in My Cocina. Like, it's a lot of fun. You can tell they're really enjoying what they're doing. Like, again, we're seeing a progression. Like, this Up in My Cocina does not sound like shit they were putting out earlier. As we get to like Sway Lee's album, we'll get there. And there's stuff on there that's also way different than what they've put out before. But I feel like out of the 9-song albums, each one has like 4 or 5 that I really like. Yeah. And then there are some that are forgettable. And I think that's okay because when you put out 27 songs, like you said, it's hard for ones to stand out.
Yep.
And the more you put out, the more good stuff that's going to overshadow the all right stuff.
Yeah. And
I mean, who knows? Maybe Teed Up or Bedtime Stories is something that really hits if it's on Shrem Life or Shrem Life 2 or it's on a completely different album. Yep. But when you put it side by side with Buckets in 42 and Perplexing Pegasus and Close, like, it's hard to stand out that way.
Yeah, I think initially this is going to be so fun to talk about because my opinion on these three projects have changed so much, even just within like the past like 12 like year or so. But initially, this was actually my favorite of the three. There was kind of like this Migos element where I feel like even when they break off, I just want to see y'all together. I think they just work good together. I think they can do great, great shit alone, but like there's such a high floor when they get together. Like, I don't know if there's like a trash song on the joint effort.
Yeah, it works really well.
Yeah, so I like this one. I think you mentioned the songs I love. Perplexing Pegasus, Up in My Cochina, Buckets. Like, dope start to it. I'm kind of going through like, okay, this is kind of This is the Ray Sherman I'm familiar with. Let's see what we get on these solo joints.
Yeah. We move on to Swaycation, which mm-hmm. Sway Lee claims is the next Yeezus.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone hated Yeezus at first. Everyone hated Swaycation at first. It's going through. I started off as a really big disrespecter of Swaycation. I really was hating on it. I think I was just really annoyed. Again, I beat this drum a lot on this show. I don't like how people think just because you put a melody behind something, you are more talented as an artist than a rapper.
Right.
That very much was the case with Sway Lee and Slim Jimmy, because Sway Lee was popping out to do hooks for other people and yeah. stuff. They made it sound like he was carrying the group. That's just not the case. It's not. Yeah. So, I mean, I've grown a little bit on Swaycation. Really big fan of like Heartbreak and In Chino Hills
mm-hmm.
to Heat of the Moment to Offshore to Guatemala. That's a hell of a run right in the middle there.
Yeah.
Hurt to Look isn't too bad of a song. It's hard for these two to make a song that I really despise, to be honest with you.
Correct. I feel the same way.
Like, they are too talented and too personable and too charismatic to make something that's off-putting. And yeah. I think they're smart enough, and Mike Will Made It is such a good producer, and he's smart yeah. enough to not step out of the comfort zone too much, but they still give you a variety. Like yeah. Heat of the Moment is definitely a way different song than Buckets. Like yeah. it's, they're not close to each other at all, but it still feels like the same people are making them.
Yeah. And you know, you brought up how they kind of just really put it all on the line with obviously all the songs and their features. I think they do a good job of picking features. Obviously they had the Mike Will connection. They were big artists. They could really get damn near anybody they wanted. And I mean, they do get a lot of people who you'd expect: Thug, Future, Travis, Weeknd. You get like familiar names, but it's not like phoned in. Like, I think they know what sounds work for certain features. They know what songs to do themselves, and I think they do that good. On to Swaycation. I didn't like this shit at first. When it first came out, I didn't like this shit much at all. I was like, y'all are really hyping Damn, this.
Sway Lee might have been right, man. It might be the next year.
I will say the one song that I did like actually was Hurt to Look. Hurt to Look came out as it was a single, I think. And yeah, it was. Yes. I think I'll need to go back and pull my, if I have like my Spotify stats, this might have been the song I played the most that year. I remember one time specifically, I played Hurt to Look on a loop for like 30 minutes. Like the way he was singing on this song, I just thought was amazing and kind of new for him. He was actually like an R&B singer here, and
yeah,
love that song. Maybe my favorite song on this whole thing. I still love it, but there are moments all throughout that I love. Guatemala, I think, was a single too.
Guatemala is the big single off this whole project. I think yeah. it's the biggest song on here.
Yeah. Offshore, I know we all love Offshore. Offshore is super dope, but like even, you know, Heartbreaking in Chino Hills, Heat of the Moment, like, again, there's just not really anything bad on here. And there's a lot of stuff that with time I've been like, oh, this shit is actually really, really good.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's hard for either of them to make music that's forgettable. Like
yeah.
that. I mean, not forgettable. They make music that kind of gets overlooked, but it's hard for them to make something that you'll despise.
And I think part of it is they don't kind of their them being like the inverse of their 2010s group counterpart Migos. They don't really flood. They don't drop a lot of Lucy's. They don't really do features. They space their shit. Like whenever you hear some Ray Shrimmer, it has been like well thought out. We picked what we think is the best. And this is the shit that y'all are going to like. They're really good with, like, the quality control of their music.
Yeah, I think they deserve credit for that. I think Mike Will deserves some credit for that.
Absolutely, yeah.
They're very smart about it. I mean, it's been 7 years. We've only heard 3 albums.
Yeah.
That's a good number there. And they don't overwhelm you with stuff. I mean, Sway Lee can go off and do some features. Slim Jimmy will go off and do some features. They don't feel plastered everywhere.
Yeah.
And yet, they still like have massive songs like Black Beatles.
Big,
back
big
to how
songs.
Big how big Black Beatles was. Holy shit.
Like, it's wild, you know. How, like, is No Flex Zone a top five biggest, top three biggest, top 10, whatever. Like, when you think, when you see No Flex Zone, it's like, okay, this is going to be their biggest song. Maybe they can stick around or do some stuff, but this is going to be like the peak of their career. And that, and like you said at the top, just the how far from the truth that is. So you got to give them a lot of credit for that. But yeah, back to Swaycation. Love Swaycation. Has grown on me a lot. Elite summer album for sure. That's when I get the most burn out of it. But yeah, the one that definitely grew on me. Swae Lee might have been right.
My favorite of the three is Jim Tro. That should come to no surprise. It's the most rap heavy one. Slim Jimmy clears out, ISOs, goes to fucking work, Brinks truck right out the gate. I love this goddamn song. I was listening to it in the shower the other day and I couldn't believe how good it was. Chanel, another really good song on here. Probably played the hell out of that. Big fan of Cap. Changed Up is a little bit like him trying to put his serious hat on and kind of talk about like the grind and like making it. And it's still super entertaining to listen to.
I actually like Change Up because it is like that class clown you've known like all your 4 years in high school, and then you guys have like a serious conversation at a party or something, and you're like, holy shit, there was like this whole there was this whole other side of you that I didn't know. I think he actually does it good, like that, even like the beat, it has that like street, like you get like the rags to riches like element. And I think it's,
and it doesn't feel preachy, it doesn't it feels like it fits in with the rest of what they do. And I feel that way about Growed Up as well. Juggling Biddies. Real good one too. But yeah, Jim Tro's my favorite out of the three, probably.
I mean, it's the only one that has a Zoe Kravitz feature, so you're not going to get me shit on it.
That's for sure.
And it's funny, Zoe Kravitz is actually kind of good on this shit, bro. Like,
yeah,
I don't know if they've told that story, but super interesting how she ended up on this project and was like kind of good.
Yeah. Recipes to Trouble, who's also on that.
Yeah, love that song too.
Yeah, they did a good job with the features. I don't know if we can do a top three for a 27 song. So do we want to do a top two for each of the three?
Yeah, I like that. Top two for each.
Yeah. For the first one, I'll do Buckets and Perplexing Pegasus. For Swaycation, I'll do Heartbreaking in Encino Hills and Heat of the Moment. And for Jim Tro, I'm going to do Brinks Truck and Changed Up.
All right. So for Shrimp, I'm going to go with Buckets as well. And then I'm going to go Up in My Cochina. For Swaycation, got to go Hurt to Look. And give me Offshore. And then for Jim Tro, this is an interesting one. Give me Brinks Truck. And Give me Cap.
That's good choices.
Yeah.
Good choices.
Yeah. I mean, real quick, because I mean, we kind of talked about if D'Angelo would be doing music. Like, how do you think people are going to, like, how receptive do you think people are going to be to a Shrimp Life 4?
It has to be good. It can't be okay.
Yeah.
It can't be okay. If it's anything less than what they've put out so far, I think they're going to get a lot of shit. People's attention span and people's patience for things has kind of run thin. Unless you're constantly putting out music, you can't put out anything that's subpar.
Yeah.
We saw it with Kendrick. People were getting real antsy. People tend to get antsy with like the TDE stuff.
Yeah.
I really liked Kendrick's album, so I was okay with it. But
yeah,
there are some people that have kind of let it pass by them, and it's kind of soured their view on him a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's Kendrick fucking Lamar. So
right,
with Ray Schremmerd, they put out something that's half done, or they put out something that doesn't really appeal to people, I think they'll catch a lot of heat. And it doesn't help that Slim Jimmy's in a Twitter Spaces every fucking $200 dates and shit.
I hope he's finding some inspiration in the spaces, man. Maybe not for $2.
I really hope he's not.
But I have no idea what's going to happen with this Knicks from Life project. I mean, like we've kind of said, I mean, solo features together, they don't really make bad shit. So I don't have any reason to be like, this album's actually gonna be bad. But yeah, it's like you said, especially if there isn't like a single that or a song that kind of latches on, I do feel like it's something that people might overlook. But I'm actually really excited for this. It's kind of like a back against the wall scenario. I feel like people are kind of not really on Ray Schremmerd like that, the way they should be. So I'm excited.
I think Sway Lee got hit pretty hard with the Swaycation reception.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people attack that. As far as we know, they still have a good relationship with Mike Will. And
right,
if they still do have a good relationship with Mike Will, I trust him enough to really polish work. I mean, like, because not everything he does is stuff that I enjoy, but for the most part, everything he does is complete. Like,
yeah,
he is very, like, hands-on and pays a lot of attention to what he puts out. He cares about his craft.
Yeah, so. I mean, Mike Will is definitely Mike Will for a reason. I hope they kind of use the influence that they have, you know, not just amongst themselves, but with Mike Will, with all the success they've had, to maybe get like some really, really big features. I would love them to maybe kind of not necessarily lean on that this time, but, you know, don't be afraid to tap into it and just keep being weird. Ray Sherman makes weirder music than they get credit for. I hope they kind of keep diving into that. So,
yeah. And one thing though, they're starting to get a little old for the party music, so they're running out of time.
Yeah. I mean, you need
like one or two albums. I don't want to hear club music from you when you're mid-30s. Like, it's
Yeah. So we'll see what they do. I'm excited for it. But yeah. I think that brings us to the end.
It does. It does.
Oh. This is a good one. I feel like we could even revisit this with other albums, because there's a lot of hot takes, a lot of good three album runs,
a lot of good three album runs. You want to dig into any music you've listened recently to since the last time we talked? Obviously, there's the Beyonce and the Joey Badass and that stuff, but is there any like stuff people might not have heard that you want to give a quick shout out to?
Obviously, Calvin Harris just came out today. A lot of differing opinions on that. I'm cool with the album. I think it's actually pretty good. I'll say that. I've only heard it like once, so I can't give too much of a take on it. Kyle Dion, he had the Deluxe Hits project. Every time Kyle Dion does some shit, I'm gonna plug it. Another one, Unusual Demont. He had a really dope single. It's called Sugar. I think it came out here this week or last week. It was super, super dope. But yeah, no, I'm kind of like going back a little bit. Stuff that I might have missed on earlier in the year. Like I was talking to Roby, been going back into Lucky Day, Kehlani. Like just going back into shit that I might have missed earlier. Xavier Omar, he put out an EP a couple weeks ago. But yeah, nothing major. Beyonce, of course, I might have to find a way to talk about the Beyonce record. It's a lot of turmoil in the streets.
We can talk about it.
Yeah, you got to finish it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can finish it today. I'll listen to it while I game or something.
All right, cool. Yeah.
Me and Lee hope we'll be back soon.
Yeah, we're coming back. We're going to be like D'Angelo. We're coming right back. Coming right back.
It won't take too long of a hiatus.
But yeah, no, we're actually coming right back.
Yeah.
Appreciate y'all for tapping in. Hope everybody has a good one. Take care of yourself. All kinds of fucking sicknesses out here.